Welcome. I'm John Kiriakou, and this is The Deep State. I want to bring on now investigative journalist Jason Polychron. Jason, thank you very much. Jason, let's start at the beginning. The Church of Scientology has always been controversial, not just because of its beliefs, which really came out of a series of science fiction books written in the 1950s by L. Ron Hubbard, but because of the way they treat children, because of the way they treat people who leave the faith, because of the way they treat people who don't want to offer up as much money as the church might want them to offer up. Tell us about the church, about its findings, and then transition us into this tax situation.
Well, as you said, the Church of Scientology was originally founded in 1950 by a man named L. Ron Hubbard when he wrote a book entitled Dianetics, the Modern Science of Mental Health, which was kind of a hilarious title, given that this man, L. Ron Hubbard, had absolutely no credentials. He had no business calling himself any kind of a medical professional of any kind. However, the book Dianetics was very popular. It went to it was on the bestseller list for many months, and I can go into as much detail as you want. But quite frankly, it was almost as if L. Ron Hubbard started a self-help movement, mm-hmm. and kind of became a self-help guru, even though that term wasn't popular back then. But his whole message was, with my teachings and with everybody else working together, we can improve you as a person. You can become more than just a regular person. You can improve yourself. And then, I can go on and on and on, but very simply put, L. Ron Hubbard then made a claim that Scientology, which morphed out of Dianetics, was a religion. And in 1957, the IRS granted Scientology tax exemption. And they held tax exemption from 1957 to 1967. And then the IRS rescinded Scientology's tax exemption, arguing that Scientology was violating what's known as the annulment clause of the 501c3. And what that means is that monies that were given, simply put, to Scientology were actually benefiting L. Ron Hubbard personally. He was just, And that's called annulment, which you're not allowed to do. So in 67, the tax exemption was rescinded. But the founder, L. Ron Hubbard, claimed that he shouldn't be paying in taxes. I can go into as much detail as you care to hear. But L. Ron Hubbard had a pathological hatred for the government and for taxation. So anyway, from 1967 onward, they did not have tax exemption, but they claimed that they should. Then in 1986, L. Ron Hubbard dies, and a man by the name of David Miscavige rises up to take over Scientology. And in 1986, again, simply put, what's known as the war with the IRS is launched, which included 2,400 lawsuits, advertisements that Scientology paid for in periodicals like USA Today, disparaging the IRS. And so this war went on. And then in 1989, there was a Supreme Court ruling involving Scientology, but the ruling was on our tax code. The ruling was issued June 5th, 1989. And then in a series of events that I would very much like to discuss with you, on the 1st of October, 1993, the IRS reinstated Scientology's tax exemption, and they've enjoyed tax exemption from them until now. However, what I'm very much hoping to discuss with you is how, in fact, the IRS is presently violating the Supreme Court ruling. It's entitled Hernandez v. Commissioner. The IRS is 180 out violating this ruling. and how Scientology's tax exemption that was issued in 1993 is unconstitutional and unlawful. And kind of the bottom line up front, John, is that there is a crime in progress. And that crime is that the IRS is violating a Supreme Court ruling on our tax code, obviously. And Scientology enjoys tax exemption unconstitutionally and unlawfully presently. And I was hoping to discuss this with you and your audience. And, if you appreciate matters of deep state activity, government agencies doing things that they're not supposed to, acting outside of their authority, acting outside of the law. And if that interests you, I have another case. I mean, you exposed what the CIA was doing down in Guantanamo outside of the law with the enhanced interrogations. And I'm here to discuss another one of these matters with you now.
Let's do that. Let's frame this too. This is a religion that many people consider to be a cult. It is very, very well funded because there's a certain kind of tithing where people, in many faiths, people give 10% of their incomes. It's not 10%. It's like everything you have in many cases with the Scientologists. And they've used that money to buy real estate. So they're very well represented in places like Southern California, Washington, D.C., where they have enormous compounds. But like you say, they're tax exempt. Now, there was a period in the 1970s and the 1980s where they actually had a program whereby they got church members to seek employment in the federal government, specifically in the IRS, so that they could spy on the government and report back to the Church of Scientology. Tell us about that, and then let's get into some of these substantive issues that you're raising.
Absolutely. So what you're referring to, it's called Operation Snow White, which ran from 1973 to 1977. This was a Scientology operation. And like you said, they encouraged members of their organization to get jobs within the federal government, in particular the IRS. And it was 5,000 people, John, that got jobs throughout the various government agencies, primarily the IRS. And they did it all. They stole documents from the IRS with the intent of disrupting the IRS's investigation into Scientology's tax exemption. They misfiled documents, which I would consider to be an act of sabotage. They did that with the IRS. Just skipping ahead, in 1977, the FBI raided Scientology, which is the largest raid in FBI history, which I was surprised to learn. I would think that the largest raid in FBI history would be against, some sort of a criminal group like the, narco groups or what have you, or terrorist groups.
The John Dillinger gang or something.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, it was against the Church of Scientology, unbelievably. But let's see, some other things that they did, like for instance, they got a woman to get a job at the FBI office in Los Angeles, and she stole documents from the FBI office. She reported back to Scientology what the FBI agents were talking about. I forget the woman's name now, but I can find it and I'll email it to you, but she's given interviews about this, so it's, I'm not talking out of turn. What else can I tell you? You and I have discussed, we've met previously, obviously. I currently serve as a reserve naval intelligence officer, and I have my master's degree from the National Intelligence University. And so we studied at NIU, we studied infiltrations of the U.S. government, and we talked about the Rosenbergs, and we talked about Aldrich Ames. We talked about the Russian spy ring that was rounded up in 2010. I believe it was 2010. It was definitely under the Obama administration. And that was the largest spy ring that we ever talked about at NIU, was the Russians. And then when I started researching the Scientology group and I discovered that they had infiltrated numerous government agencies with 5,000 of its members, I mean, I just fell out of my chair. I couldn't believe it. I mean, even at the National Intelligence University, this spy operation flew under the radar. Just some other agencies that they infiltrated. I believe they infiltrated the Coast Guard Intelligence Agency.
Why?
They did. Why? Well,
Is it because they had, you know, we should add too, they had this ship, and it belonged to a division of the church called the Sea Org, the Sea Organization. Mm-hmm. It spent a lot of time just outside of U.S. territorial waters. It was staffed largely by children. The children weren't educated. They were the children of Scientology members. And many of them, you know, went through life never learning how to read and write. They were just taught to take orders from the Sea Org.
Yeah, that's another facet of all of this. There's been a lot of child abuse over the decades. People, you know, they were born and raised in Scientology, and they get out, and they don't know how to do things like open a checking account, get a credit card. They don't know about how to get a job, pay taxes. It's a very closed society. There are these compounds, as you mentioned, one in Southern California, just outside the town of Hemet. Another major compound is in, there's a big building called PAC Base, that they call it PAC Base. It's in Los Angeles. And then they have a very large property compound in Clearwater, Florida. But, you know, they live in Scientology. You know, they estimate that Scientology is worth, it's hard to pin down how much money they have, but it's about $3 to $5 billion. Is about the best guess that the internet has. And, you know, they live in these communal, you know, they're basically like motels that Scientology took over, and they live, you know, four people to a room, and they live in these buildings, and they're fed by Scientology, and it's a great deal of abuse.
Jason, let me ask you, why is it that once you are a member of the Church of Scientology, that it's almost impossible to leave? And if you do leave, you have to escape. You can't just say, this isn't for me, and you just walk out the door. You have to escape, like in the dead of night. And then nobody in your family who is a member of the Church of Scientology can ever speak to you again. Why that kind of punitive secrecy?
Well, it really all goes back to L. Ron Hubbard. You know, he was kind of a failure in life, mm-hmm. and then World War II emerged, and he was an officer in the Navy during World War II, where he got a taste of power and authority, and he never could get rid of that taste in his mouth. He wanted power, he wanted authority, he wanted control over people, and if you look at Scientology, that desire for power manifested. Like, for instance, L. Ron Hubbard would often wear a naval-style uniform. You were talking about the Sea Organization staffing the ship that L. Ron Hubbard had for a long time, named the Apollo. And everybody dresses in Navy-style uniforms. Right. But you were asking, like, why is it that it's so difficult to leave Scientology? John, it's a prison of the mind. It's a belief that Scientology is your entire world. It's, for instance, Scientologists you have their own language, as many, you know, like many industries do. Like, you know, Intel people have their own verbiage. Doctors have their own verbiage. Well, Scientology has its own verbiage. But it's sort of this belief that if you leave Scientology, your whole world is going to collapse. And unfortunately, for a lot of people, that's not exactly true. For a lot of people, that's not exactly false. You know, because when they get out of Scientology, they're in their 40s and 50s sometimes.
And
they have
not
no
equipped.
Education.
They're not equipped for life.
No. They have no education. They have no marketable job skills. They have no money, because when you're a member of the Sea Org, You don't get paid anything. You just don't get paid.
And in fact, you sign a 1 billion year contract.
Yep, that's certainly part of the what I would call the mind manipulation. Because you see, Scientologists, they believe in reincarnation. So when you sign that 1 billion year contract, you're not just signing it for this lifetime, but many lifetimes to come. And so to leave all of this is very difficult. There was an interview by a former Scientologist who said, when you leave Scientology, the first thing you have to do is realize in your mind that you've been duped. That's the first step. And then it can be as much as a year or two later before they actually physically remove themselves. You were also talking about the shunning policy that Scientology has. They call it the disconnect policy. And it is. It's a shunning policy. If you leave the church, then your wife and your children and your brothers and your sisters, they'll stop talking to you. And the threat of losing your family, you know, that's not a mind trap. That's a real trap. I mean, that can really, you know, people don't want to lose their families. So they either, you know, they stay in Scientology. There are basically three levels of Scientologists. The most inner is the Sea Org that are like the clergy. Then there's what's known as staff, which are people that work at the Scientology churches or orgs, as they call them. And then there are the regular people who have regular jobs and they go to Scientology to engage in Scientology teachings and trainings, all created by Hubbard. That they believe gives them spiritual comfort.
Jason, thank you very much. When we come back, we'll have more with investigative journalist Jason Polycron. I'm John Kiriakou, and this is The Deep State. Stay right there. Welcome back to The Deep State. I'm John Kiriakou. We're joined again today by our guest, investigative journalist Jason Polycron. I want to ask you about this tax situation. At first glance, it seems quite complicated. You and I have had this conversation offline. It actually isn't so complicated. It seems actually pretty clear that the government has dropped the ball here. And it's funny to me because the IRS especially is perfectly willing to go after someone who the IRS believes hasn't paid his or her fair share of taxes. But then you've got this multi-billion dollar cult that mm-hmm. gets away with whatever it wants to get away with. Can you walk us through this?
Well, yes. All right. So what happened was, June 5th, 1989, the United States Supreme Court issued the ruling Hernandez v. Commissioner. Should I just talk to you about the Hernandez case?
Sure.
I think that's,
sure. Let's start with Hernandez.
Okay. And what it was, as I mentioned earlier, Scientology engaged in this 2400 lawsuit war from 1986 to 1993. One of those lawsuits was filed by a Scientologist by the name of Hernandez. And sure enough, it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And in this ruling, the Supreme Court affirmed that quid pro quo transactions with religions are not tax deductible. Okay, so the Supreme Court ruled in the IRS's favor. But in fact, the Hernandez ruling was a real problem for the IRS. And the reason is that the IRS allows the quid pro quo transactions of other religions to be deducted, not in compliance with the law. The two biggest religions that this affects is the LDS Mormon religion, or to be more accurate, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I want to be polite, but for the sake of time, I'll just say the LDS Mormon religion. And the Jewish religion. Now, in our previous interview, I said that LDS Mormon people are obligated to pay tithing. Mm-hmm. Okay, I was a little bit loose with my words, and in the comments, people called me out on this. Let me clarify. In the LDS Mormon religion, if you want to get something called a temple recommend, you must pay tithing. But if you don't want the temple recommend, you don't have to pay tithing. The temple recommend gets you certain privileges and ceremonies within the LDS Mormon religion. I can go into more detail if you care to hear it. Okay. Now, the IRS presently allows LDS Mormon tithing to be deducted, but that's against the law. The IRS is not supposed to be allowing those deductions per the law and per the Supreme Court Hernandez ruling. And that is how, one way, the the IRS is presently violating the Supreme Court Hernandez ruling. Okay. The other religion is the Jewish religion, which has what are called temple dues. Mm-hmm. Now, about 95% of Jewish synagogues charge temple dues, and they are mandatory. If you pay, you can come into the temple and receive services. If you don't pay, you can't come in. The IRS allows these temple dues to be deducted. And that's against the law, and it's against the Hernandez ruling.
Well, let me ask you, once Hernandez was decided by the court, why didn't the IRS just blanket change the policy? If the court came down so clearly that these were not deductible expenses on individuals' income taxes, why not just change the policy then and move on?
Well, legally they should have, mm-hmm. but this was going to cause all kinds of anger within the country. I mean, the IRS was going to face political backlash. They were probably going to get sued by LDS Mormon people and Jewish people, and there are other religions that are affected. And this was just going to be very unpopular. And I believe that the IRS just saw the Hernandez ruling and said, we don't want this to be true. We just don't want to deal with this mess. And I haven't spoken about this yet, but I'll get to it. But basically, the IRS just took the Hernandez ruling and threw it in the waste bin and just pretended that it didn't exist. Right. So your question was, why didn't they just do their jobs? I think they calculated doing their jobs was just going to be too much to deal with, and they just didn't want to.
And then how did the Church of Scientology react to that?
Okay, so when the Hernandez ruling came down, the Church of Scientology, but really its lawyers, realized that the IRS had a problem on its hands, that they were allowing these other religions to deduct their quid pro quo transactions. Okay, so Scientology filed two lawsuits. One is entitled Garrison v. Commissioner, that was filed in 1989. And then in 1990, they filed another lawsuit entitled Powell v. USA. And in these two lawsuits, the Scientologists, but really Scientology, argued something called administrative inconsistency on the IRS, saying, you're allowing these other religions to deduct mm-hmm. their quid pro quo transactions, but you're not allowing us. And the reason why they filed and sued for administrative inconsistency is because in her dissent, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, in her dissent in the Hernandez ruling, pointed this out. She was the one who used the term administrative inconsistency. She talked about LDS Mormon tithing, and then she talked about something called Jewish High Holy Day tickets. But if you look at the websites of most synagogues, they wrap up the High Holy Day tickets in the temple dues. But she talked about these two religions, which is why if you pull the Hernandez ruling, and the easiest way to find it is you go to Google and you just search Hernandez v. Commissioner, Library of Congress, and it comes right up, or you can find it on my website, jasonpolychron.com. But anyway, if you pull up the Hernandez ruling and you do Control F and you type in the word Mormon, you will see it appear five times in the ruling. And if you do a word search for the word Jew in the Hernandez ruling, you'll see that that word appears five times in the ruling, and it's all in Justice O'Connor's dissent, where she talks about the administrative inconsistency. So Scientology picked up on this. They saw the problem. They filed the Powell lawsuit, and they filed the Garrison lawsuit. And it was with these two lawsuits that Scientology was going to prove to the courts that the IRS was allowing the quid pro quo transactions of LDS Mormon people and Jewish people to be deducted, but not allowing Scientologists to deduct their quid pro quo transactions. And because the main ruling of Hernandez was to affirm that quid pro quo transactions are not tax deductible. The courts in Powell and in Garrison, if they won those lawsuits, the courts would have ordered the IRS to get in compliance with the Hernandez ruling, and the IRS would have to deny the deductibility of those quid pro quo transactions that I mentioned from Mormonism and Judaism.
Right.
And the IRS didn't want any of that to happen. They didn't want Scientology to win those two lawsuits. They didn't want the administrative inconsistency proven on them.
Jason Polycron, investigative journalist, thank you very much for being with us today. And thank you for watching. This is The Deep State. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.